This message comes from NPR sponsor, Discover. Tired of not getting a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey, y'all. This is Sam's Aunt Betty. This week, do corporate boycotts even work? All right, let's start the show.
You're listening to It's Been a Minute from NPR. I'm Sam Sanders, and today we're talking boycotts, a certain kind of boycott. So late last month, Georgia Governor Brian Kemp, a Republican, he signed this huge overhaul of election laws in Georgia. Critics say these new rules are meant to suppress the vote, especially in communities of color, communities that helped turn Georgia blue in 2020. Reaction to this voting law in Georgia has been swift. You might have heard by now, this has led some pretty major corporations to get involved in this fight. Since Governor Kemp signed that voting law, Major League Baseball moved this year's All-Star game from Atlanta to Denver.
Commissioner Rob Manfred writing, "The decision will demonstrate our values as a sport. Major League Baseball fundamentally supports voting rights for all Americans and opposes restrictions to the ballot box."
And Coca-Cola and Delta, both based in Georgia, they also came out harshly against this law,
signing an open letter avowing their nonpartisan commitment to equality and democracy.
But the thing I keep wondering whenever corporations take stances on issues like a voting bill is whether that really works, whether it really ultimately changes anything. And I also wonder why these days it feels like we're more likely to see a corporate boycott than boycotts that feel a bit more grassroots. I'm thinking MLK and the Montgomery bus boycott from decades ago. You know, things that started with the people. To answer those questions and a few more, I called up Dahlia Lithwick. She writes about the courts and the law for Slate, and she hosts a legal podcast called Amicus. One of her most recent articles is called "The Problem with Boycotting Georgia," and it looks at this bigger picture of corporate activism. So MLK was asking people to do things together, collectively. And I don't know, it just feels different when it's the MLB doing these things. Should we look at these things differently?
Right. So what I'm hearing in your voice is it feels a little hinky when a corporation is doing it. And I think that's right. And I think there's a couple of layers. One is, I think, the thing you're flicking at, Sam, which is it feels performative, right? It feels like an exercise in branding.
Yeah.
And it also feels, I think, if you kind of put it in the context of the other ways that corporations try to affect policy, you have to think about the fact that the other ways they do it are making huge campaign donations, right? And so all of these—
To both parties.
Exactly. So the way they hedge their bets is they donate to both parties in equal amounts, and then they can say they're not partisan. But, you know, the same Coca-Cola that is now, you know, talking about decrying Georgia's law gave, you know, $794,000 to the Georgia Democratic Party, $848,000 to the Republican Party, right? Delta did the same. So, I mean, I just think we should be really clear that some of the same entities donated to Brian Kemp's gubernatorial run, to some of the state senators. So you're right to say this looks like what's happening on the outside is really fundamentally different from the sausage making on the inside.
It seems as if I haven't seen an actual real grassroots MLK bus boycott style boycott in a while. Do those still happen as much, or is the energy of the boycott moving more into corporate spaces?
You know, it's interesting. I was just, in preparing for this conversation, reading about the faith leaders and what they're doing. And these are, you know, leaders who are horrified by the Georgia, this omnibus voting law. And interestingly, one of the things they're doing is lobbying the corporations. So it's right now they are, in fact, in conversation with Delta and with Coca-Cola and actually some other Georgia-based businesses in conversation about whether the boycotts should proceed. So I think in a funny way, at least the faith communities that are organizing around this seem to be organizing to leverage the corporations, which is really different from what you and I are thinking about in the civil rights era. And I think folded into that, we would have to also note that Stacey Abrams has come out saying, thank you, I like where your impulse is, but please don't remove business from the state because the vulnerable minorities that are hurt most are not going to be well served. So I think some of that ambivalence that you're kind of leading from is really leeching into how the organizing is working too.
Yeah. Do these things work? You know, in your Slate piece, you write about all these previous examples in the last few years of these corporate boycotts happening across the country. Pound for pound, do they work?
Yeah. You know, it was one of the things that I was really trying to think about was we know some of these have been really successful, and notably Mike Pence had signed this quote-unquote religious freedom bill in 2015 in Indiana that would have allowed businesses to challenge local laws that force them to serve gay customers. And this caused such a national outcry. You may remember that the NCAA headquartered in Indianapolis started pushing back, and there was an immense kind of corporate pushback. And as a result, Pence ended up signing a really watered-down version of that law. And we saw similar big, big boycotts around North Carolina's, you remember the bathroom bans that would have barred transgender folks from using the bathroom aligned to their own gender identities. That also resulted in massive corporate boycotts. But the reason I'm a little bit dubious that they work is even in those states where they work out, it ignores the fact that similar or worse bills then pass in other states, and we don't notice it. I'm sort of suggesting that I think if we look at these as one-off state-by-state endeavors, then sort of hyper-focusing on Coca-Cola and Major League Baseball and these dumb conversations about cancel culture means we've taken our eyes off Texas and New Hampshire and the other states where they're actually sailing through the state legislatures and nobody's clocking it.
What I hear you saying is let's make sure to look for the forest in the midst of all these individual trees.
That's what I'm saying. And I'm also saying, and I think this is where you started, this idea that corporations are going to save us a little bit elides the reality of how kind of opportunistic, you know, corporate performance of goodwill can be. And so
I still remember all of the, like, statements after George Floyd's death. And I just, it's like, I still feel icky about, like, every company under the sun, you know, performing support for Black lives. It's just weird sometimes,
no,
a lot of the time.
So right. And I think that one of the things that we can say about Coca-Cola and Delta is that they had such strong statements after George Floyd and yet still were really silent about this legislation until they pivoted on a dime last week and started to. So I think that, you know, this sounds so cynical, but I think we're agreeing. Looking to corporations to have the best interest of poor and minority voters front and center, like, no, their interests are in
shareholders.
Their shareholders and selling product. And so I just think if these corporate bans can focus attention and can allow us to have a meaningful conversation about vote suppression, about what did and didn't go wrong in the 2020 election, on why it is that poor and minority communities are so out of proportion affected by some of these provisions. That's useful, and I'm for that. But I just don't think we should have illusions that there's a beating heart of gold under Coca-Cola.com Corporation Incorporated trademark.
But the slogans are so sweet, Dahlia. Thanks again to Dahlia Lithwick. She writes about the courts and the law for Slate. She is also the host of the legal podcast, Amicus. All right, coming up, another type of bill moving through state houses right now. Anti-trans bills. We talk about what that means for trans kids.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Discover. Here's a familiar situation. You have a question about your credit card. You call the number for help and can't get a hold of anyone. If only you had a Discover card. With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. A real person. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This message comes from NPR sponsor BetterHelp. When you keep your stress bottled up, it can eat away at you. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to make them better. Try BetterHelp Online Therapy, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp at betterhelp.com/NPR today to get 10% off your first month.
On NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast, we talk about movies, music, and more, like why The Great Pottery Throwdown is a comforting binge watch, and a look back at some of Chadwick Boseman's essential performances. All of that in around 20 minutes every weekday. Listen now to the Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast from NPR.
So we've been talking about a voting law in Georgia that has been drawing national attention. But turns out very similar voting bills are moving through state houses across the country. And in a lot of those cases, a small handful of national political groups write the templates for all these bills to be used from state to state. And that same thing, it's happening right now on another issue, the rights of trans kids. In 2021, there have been more anti-trans bills introduced by state legislators than any year before.
We're up to 80 or 90 proposed bills in over 25 states.
That is historian and author Jules Gill Peterson. She says these bills pretty much fall into two categories.
One is a kind of bill about youth participation in sports, in public education, in K through 12.
This important piece of legislation will ensure that young girls in Mississippi have a fair, level playing field in public school sports.
And the other is bills that propose to ban or even in some cases criminalize the delivery of healthcare, gender-affirming healthcare.
Arkansas, now the first state to ban gender-conforming medical treatments for transgender minors. State lawmakers overrode a veto from the state.
Jewel says there's nothing new about this avalanche of bills. They're similar to earlier iterations of Republican wedge issues, anti-gay laws, anti-abortion laws. These new bills, they treat trans kids as if they've never been seen before. But trans kids aren't new either. You had a piece in the New York Times recently that really spelled out the ways in which, if you look throughout our history, trans youth have always been around. And so if these issues aren't new, and if children experiencing these things aren't new, why now? Why this push now? Why 80 to 90 bills now?
You know, we're living through this moment where trans people are culturally quite visible, much more visible than they were 10 years ago. And that includes trans youth. You can turn on the TV and see trans characters on teen shows, right? And so I can see how people might mistake that new cultural visibility for the idea that trans children themselves are new, or that we don't really know that much about them, that this is somehow a new generational question. And so I see, you know, a lot of the times when I point out that that's actually completely untrue. And if we look back historically, we can see plenty of evidence of trans children actually living trans childhoods, transitioning, socially transitioning, and medically transitioning as far back as the 1930s and 40s. A lot of people reply, well, yes, but there's never been this many trans kids as there are today, and that's the real problem, right?
But also, how do they know? How do they know, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's just a definitionally transphobic answer, right? If you think it's okay for some people to be trans, but we should have as few as possible, you actually just don't support trans people. But more importantly, like, the answer to that question is really obvious. It has nothing to do with medicine. It's just that it's slightly less dangerous and slightly less invisible to be trans today. And the internet exists. So young people can, you know, learn about trans identity more easily than they used to be able to. That's the only reason why we see more children identifying publicly as trans, but it doesn't mean there are more trans children. That's the kind of mistake that I think people are making, and that these anti-trans crusaders are also peddling that message to try and undermine the reality of trans youth.
I'm just hearing you explain some of this logic. It's like that kind of logic, that kind of narrative. Yeah, it is tacitly saying we don't want any of them around, if you can say that there are too many of them around, right?
Exactly. And it's almost an argument lifted word for word from anti-lesbian and gay political movements 20 or 30 years ago, starting in the 1980s and 90s, you know, oh, well, too many children are going to turn out gay, right? It's the exact same logic. It's just there's this convenient straw man or foil. It's like, yeah, if you stop and break down the argument, it's just discrimination.
Yeah. So you mentioned there are 80 or 90 bills right now targeting trans youth. Are they all popping up organically, or is there some sort of concerted effort, some puppet master with these bills?
We've seen this kind of strategy, legislative strategy, before from the conservative movement. When it's really hard to make gains at the national level because policies are unpopular, often, you know, state-level GOP politicians will turn to cultural wedge issues and essentially try to pass a whole series of identical bills, you know, more or less knowing that they're not going to be implemented. This is the fundraising strategy for the GOP in the lead up to the 2022 midterms. And we know that in part because the bills are basically all templates of one another. A lot of them are written through focus groups and seminars by leading conservative groups like the Family Research Council, which has been very actively involved, for example, in Arkansas, or the Alliance Defending Freedom, a right-wing group that helped pass and is now defending a bill in court in Idaho. These are sort of the marching orders. So it's very clearly part of a broader political strategy that's sort of getting executed at the state level, because that's where the GOP tends to have more, you know, for example, veto-proof majorities in certain states. Yeah. They can actually get legislation passed.
Yeah, yeah. You know, the president of a socially conservative group, Penny Nance, she was quoted in this Politico piece recently saying of these bills targeting trans kids, this is the wedge issue that will bring suburban women back to the polls and increase their support for Republicans. And Republicans would be foolish not to lean into it. You know, we've said this phrase wedge issue already in this conversation, but when something is called a wedge issue, what does that mean exactly politically?
Yeah, you know, I've seen that wedge issue frame come up a lot in the reporting too, that, oh, this suddenly is the new cultural wedge issue. And I have to take a little bit of issue with that, because transphobia has been a popular policy for quite a while. And, you know, in the lead up to the legalization of same-sex marriage, trans activists warned the movement that in such a narrow focus on one legal issue, we would be left vulnerable, and the most vulnerable people in our communities would be scapegoated and would be next. And yet we were told, too bad, you have to wait your turn. We'll deal with trans rights next. And yet here we are. So I have to say, you know, in response to that person's comments, advocates of trans youth are middle class mothers, actually. They're parents.
Really?
And so, yeah, that's just because they're the ones that have the time and the resources to advocate for their kids and navigate the really complicated bureaucratic and healthcare system. So I actually am not convinced that it's a winning play. I think it might appeal to the base, but the Republican base doesn't really seem to be suburban women, at least not in the last 5 to 8 years. So, you know, I'm sort of suspicious about whether that statement is even true, but I don't doubt that that is the intention. And, you know, once again, it's like, these cards are being laid down. It's really obvious what's going on. So even if folks are not 100% sure they understand, you know, as well as they would like to, the ins and outs of trans identity or trans childhood, they can look at the actions of these political actors. They can listen to their statements. They can see the content of these bills and what they will lead to. I think, unfortunately, whatever the measure of political success is on the side of people proposing these bills, the fallout and the loss for the people affected by them is going to happen regardless. Mm.
Thanks again to my guest, Jules Gill Peterson. You can find her work at jgillpeterson.com. All right, coming up, I have two friends of the show bring you some TV recommendations. They also play my favorite game, Who Said That? Stay with us.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy. Family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's TELADOC health/whatsyourwhy. This message comes from NPR sponsor REI Co-op. REI has gear, clothing, classes, and advice for camping and glamping, biking and hiking, axing and snacksing, backpacking, and another outdoor thing that rhymes with backpacking. Visit your local REI Co-op or REI.com for the million and one ways you can opt outside.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Homes.com. When you're home shopping as a parent, you have lots of questions about local schools. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by a dedicated in-house research team. It's also you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Are you an audacious entrepreneur with a world-changing idea? Then join us this May for the virtual How I Built This Summit hosted by me. We'll have interviews with some of the best-known entrepreneurs out there. We'll offer community-building sessions to meet other creative thinkers like you. Thanks to GoDaddy, the presenting sponsor of the How I Built This Summit. For more information, head to summit.npr.org.
So, have you noticed just how much your TV viewing habits have changed over the course of the pandemic? I, for one, am watching more. And the longer we've all been stuck at home, I have found myself increasingly watching anything. On top of that, new streaming platforms keep popping up, giving us more new and old TV to watch, like HBO Max. That platform debuted a few months ago, but recently it brought the 90s sitcom The Nanny to its service. And my next guest is currently hooked on that show.
I'm probably tweeting about the show one-third as much as I want to.
That is Saeed Jones. He's an author and poet. There's actually an interview with him way back in this podcast feed for his latest book, How We Fight for Our Lives.
Saeed, I want HBO to write you a check because so many people have brought up Fran Drescher to me because of your tweets.
It's true.
And my other guest is Zach Stafford. He's a writer, journalist, and former host of the podcast BuzzFeed Daily. I called them both up to play a round of Who Said That. But first, we talked pandemic TV for a bit, and I had them both offer up their best pandemic binge watches.
I want us to get to our game, but before that, I want both of you to make a case for the TV you're loving right now to our listeners. Saeed, you gotta make a case to our listening public on why they should be watching The Nanny right now, as you are.
Watch me trying to sell you on Game of Thrones, just to be contrary. I think, you know, The Nanny was ahead of its time. And like so many things...
You don't hear that a lot.
Yeah. And I think that. And I think like a lot of things in the 90s, I think what the message a lot of us received about the show was that it was about a tacky, loud, obnoxious, dumb woman. And the show isn't that. It's a romantic comedy. She's very good at her job, actually. She's really great at raising those kids. She's funny. She's sexy. If you like Golden Girls, if you liked Living Single, like The Nanny, like the way it talks about sex and desire, like is in that space. It's very bold. There was just like so much that I was like, oh, wow, this show was really being written off in a way now that I'm like, oh, I love this. And they're like 5 seasons. Like, get into it. You'll love it. I don't trust people who don't love it if they give it a chance now.
Oh, you heard it first from Saeed Jones. Zach, make a case for the TV that you're binging right now.
Fran Drescher is perfect. I think she's just incredible. So I will say that. But Billions is, if you are currently confused around like NFTs, financial markets, and all the drama of billionaires, watch Billions because it actually is created by reporters who worked reporting on billionaires doing bad things. And I also love that we went through the last 4 years of not seeing a lot of accountability in politics and in law, and the show's obsessed with accountability.
Yeah, look at this analysis. I'm going to recommend something that is so not comparable. There's a new season of Nailed It out, and Nicole Byer always brings it. She's so funny.
She's so wacky.
That is a great show. Nailed It is joy. It is so joyful.
Yes.
Yes.
And I'm honestly over the actual baking because the challenges are increasingly absurd. They'll be like, okay, you novice baker, we want you to build a Leaning Tower of Pisa cake and then build the couch that is in the house. You have 45 minutes. Like, that's just dumb. But Nicole Byer, the host, she'll have these wonderful skits to move between segments that are nonsensical, almost Dada-esque. It's insane and crazy, and she's just hilarious. So her.
She's a hoot.
All right. They're telling us to get to the game. We're going to do it. I'm so happy to have you both here for this game. It is called Who Said That? Quite simple. Zach's played before. Saeed has not. Zach, explain this game to Saeed.
So it's been a few years, but we're going to hear a clip of something that happened in the news this week, and we have to guess who said that. Okay. Right? Am I correct,
yes.
Sam?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, we're low-budget public radio, so I'm just going to read the clips.
Read
the quotes. Also, we don't have any buzzers.
That.
We don't have any buzzers.
To past games. I don't, okay. All right.
All right. Here is the first quote. Tell me who said this. It is the child of a celebrity. The quote is, then she gets to work making some more vagina eggs and candles, also vagina candles and vagina perfumes, just everything vagina.
That's about Gwyneth Paltrow.
I was about to say that.
Who would say that?
Yeah.
Who would say it?
Doesn't Gwyneth Paltrow have a child named Apple?
Yes, Apple is it.
Oh my God.
Y'all kind of got there together, but I think Saeed gets that point.
Yes, Saeed does. I'll give it to Saeed because I was like, it's Gwyneth Paltrow.
Thank you.
So that quote comes from Apple Martin, child of Chris Martin and Gwyneth Paltrow. And Apple was saying this in a TikTok that she made, kind of roasting her mother's goop business, which from the start has been criticized for being pseudoscience.
Wow.
But it was interesting because while making fun of Gwyneth Paltrow's goop, she was also pushing the product. Like, the family's going to stay getting their money.
Yeah, that's like what her trust fund is.
Uh-huh. That's like, was it Kellyanne Conway and her daughter? I see y'all. I see y'all playing both sides. Yes. Mm-hmm.
I will say, like, Gwyneth Paltrow always wins. You know, even after she had all of that critique over the, like, jade yoni eggs, the thing that were supposed to go up into your nethers, and everyone was like, don't do that. She didn't lose business. And I got to confess, full disclosure, I watched all 6 episodes of Gwyneth Paltrow's Goop Netflix show.
Really? I only saw the one in which she did mushrooms. She sent her staff to do mushrooms, actually.
That's some rich people stuff right there.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
I'm going to send
funny.
You to do mushrooms. Yeah. And I also still feel like if I, like, met Gwyneth Paltrow out in the world, she seems like she'd be pretty cool. Like, you wouldn't mind having a drink with Gwyneth Paltrow? Is that weird for me to say? I just don't have a problem with this woman.
I think she would get sloppy messy. I would be down. And I love messy, rich white women. I'm really into them. So I'm down. Yeah. I will drink her vegan wine with her and eat, you know, vegan oxtail, whatever she's serving. I will do.
Yeah. Saeed, you get that point. Okay. Let's go to the next quote. We are living in sci-fi times, but we are wearing masks from yesterday's movie. So I wanted to make a mask to fit the era that we're in.
Will I am.
Yes. Yes. Tell it. Okay, what is this story, Saeed? Because it burned me up.
I saw the article and I like had to put my phone away for a minute. Will I am and some company are developing
Honeywell.
This Honeywell. Actually a really expensive new mask for like for normal light, and it like it lights up, it's supposed to take calls, it does this and that, and it just
it's a smart
it looks
mask,
ugly,
yeah.
It sounds ugly.
It is a physical embodiment of those 2 or 3 really bad Black Eyed Peas albums.
Right.
Oh right. Wow.
True.
Sam, you were dragging
you
today.
Ain't lying.
Dragging.
I ain't heard a lie though.
I'm sorry.
I got a few words for you. I got a feeling.
Oh,
why do we let that happen?
Wow.
Why do we let that happen?
I have to say, I'm kind of interested in this mask.
All right.
I love a verse moment, you know.
Let me tell y'all what all is in this mask before you go down that path, Zach. So The New York Times had a big write-up about this mask, which is called the Super Mask. But instead of an S at the front, it's an X, like Expert Mask, whatever. Anyway, they said, quote, from the Times, it's made of silicone with athletic mesh fabric on the sides. It fits snugly around the bottom half of the face and comes with three dual-speed fans, a HEPA filtration system, noise-canceling headphones, LED lights for nighttime, a rechargeable battery, and Bluetooth capability. You can play music and take calls. Like, okay, but all we asked for was a vaccine.
Like, literally, just 100%, get the vaccine.
100%.
What are you?
Right? Also, just why?
Why?
Like, who needs this? Who wants this? And as far as I'm concerned, Will.i.am, you need to stay out of the public eye until we have a National Day of Atonement for I Gotta Feel It. I Gotta Feel It. I also want you to do a few rosaries over Boom Boom Pow. Another bad song. Man, do you remember Boom Boom Pow? Do you remember Boom Boom Pow?
You're taking us back, Sam.
You're
I know.
So mad.
God, this is really showing our age, Sam. Because other day, a young person who was like maybe 19, 20, they're an influencer, said to me, because I used to be at BuzzFeed, like Saeed, we both have spent time at BuzzFeed in the past. She said to me, I know who you are. You know, I used to read BuzzFeed in middle school. Girl. <Whoa. laughs> I shaking. So this Ooh, conversation buddy. Is one of these things Gen Z will yeah. clock us for. So there we go.
Damn.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. All right. Last quote. Enough of the black eyed peas, or as I call them, the black eyed peas.
Oh my God.
I'm done.
Oh my God.
Dad, Sam Sanders. Your poor listeners, they listen to you with these dad jokes. I swear.
Listen, this pandemic year, my dad joke capacity has increased threefold.
That's real. It'd be like that. I will say, as an aside, the other day I realized that, Sam, you are the oldest of the three of us. And I was like, that tracks.
I'm taking back your points. Zay, you got zero. I'm sorry. Zach, you're ahead.
Oh, dang.
Zach has 2 points.
Yeah, that was funny. Zay just said, I'm choosing violence in this moment. Watch me.
I mean, hey.
Watch me. Oh, okay, last quote.
Okay.
Last quote. It's from a really strange viral article on the internet this week. The quote is, I can just get girls out of their shoes. It's a thing I can do.
Oh.
What was the article about? It was in The Cut, and this, like, investigative reporter tracked down somebody.
Laura Bassett?
Yeah.
Wow.
She's the reporter who, like, found this guy who was screenshotting her feet whenever they would show up in her social media post and post them on a website, and she, like, tracked him down and interviewed him.
Yes. Yes, so this dude, that
I'm
his,
in deep.
His name is Robert.
Okay.
His name is Robert Hamilton. And this week, a reporter who published her piece in The Cut, she tracked down the stranger, the random dude in New Jersey who was taking screen grabs of pictures of her feet from her public Instagram and then uploading them to a site called WikiFeet.
Wow.
And they, like, talked for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Did y'all read this piece?
That, I did see this. It's all coming back to me. I love these types of pieces where people go and find, like, their trolls or the people, like, doing weird stuff with them on the internet and have a real conversation with them. Because they always lead to, like, these really insightful reasons why this person's being creepy. Most of the time. Sometimes people are just creepy. And
so you just this guy was just creepy. A little creepy. This guy was just a little creepy. And it's like, what's crazy is I posted this article online this week being like, oh, my God. And so many women responded were like, oh, you don't know? There's so many men everywhere all the time who were just really creepily into our feet.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, it's a whole...
Gosh, that sounds
annoying. Well, Sam, also, there's like a gay male version of this too on the internet.
There's I was about to say, unfortunately.
Let me tell you. I read this article and then went and put on 2 pairs of socks.
Sam.
If you're feeling bored and lonely, don't go to WikiFeet. Don't be screen grabbing strangers' feet. Don't get in fights on the internet. Just go watch The Nanny.
Yes.
Go watch The Nanny.
Yes. That's the anecdote. That's the thesis here that we're arriving back to full circle.
Yes.
And because, as I told you, The Nanny is a balm for all things, her character, Fran Fine, was a foot model before she started working as... That's part of her character's backstory.
Full circle.
She's got everything for everybody. We love a good callback. We love a good circle back. We did it, Joe. Congratulations to all involved in this game. Saeed, I think you won in spite of shading me over my age.
Screaming.
36, still turning tricks. It's all good.
Emphasis on tricks, honey. Oh,
thanks again to Saeed Jones and Zach Stafford.
Now it's time to end the show as we always do. Every week, listeners share the best thing that happened to them all week. We encourage folks to brag, and they do. Let's hear a few of those submissions.
Hello, Sam. This is Stephanie Shalhoub from Chicago, Illinois. The best thing that happened to me this week was it's my 70th birthday. And next month, if all goes as planned, I will receive my first Social Security check.
Hi, Sam. My name is Erica. I'm calling from San Diego. The best thing that's happened to me this week, the best thing that's probably happened the entire year, is that my daughter was accepted to medical school this week, and she will be heading up to Idaho in July.
Hey, Sam. This is Kevin from Seattle. The best thing that happened to me this week is also the best thing that happened to me all year. I finished my grad program and I completed the certification process. I'm going to be a teacher.
Since August of 2019, I lost my mother, my father, and my wife. But some good things happened too. This week, I was surprised to discover my wife had arranged a luxury week-long family vacation for me, my sons, and their families at a beautiful villa in the desert. Neither of my sons' families were able to join me for this vacation, so I'm all by myself. But the good news is the reason the rest of the family couldn't join me. That's because of the best thing that happened this week. I was informed that not just one, but both of my sons' wives are expecting babies again.
So yours has been weird, but your podcast and especially these segments have brought me joy and hope. So, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.
Congrats and thank you to all those listeners you heard there. Jeff, Kevin, Erica, and Stephanie. Listeners, do not forget, you can be a part of this segment yourself. If you want to share your best thing, you can do so at any point throughout any week. Just record yourself and send that voice memo to me via email. The email address is samsanders@npr.org. samsanders@npr.org. All right. This week, the show was produced by Janae West, Andrea Gutierrez, and Sylvie Douglas. We had fact-checking help from Ida Porasad. Our intern is Liam McBain. Our fearless editor is Jordana Hochman. Our director of programming is Steve Nelson. And our big boss is Senior VP of Programming, Anya Grundman. Listeners, till next time, be good to yourselves. I'm Sam Sanders. We'll talk soon.
This message is brought to you by NPR sponsor Lisa in collaboration with West Elm. Discover the new natural hybrid mattress, expertly crafted from natural latex and certified safe foams, designed with your health and the planet in mind. Visit leesa.com to learn more.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Capella University. With Capella's FlexPath learning format, you can earn your degree online at your own pace and get support from people who care about your success. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
Over the past couple decades, the U.S. has lost about a third of its newspapers, taking thousands of local journalists off their beat. A functioning democracy and functioning local journalism go hand in hand. We're trying to do our part, and that's why we need you to do your part. Make sure that the NPR network stays strong by supporting us at donate.npr.org. And thank you.